You're listening to a Humanist Network News podcast web extra. The following clip is a speech delivered by Rabbi Sherwin T. Wine to the New Humanism Conference in April 2007. The conference was hosted by the Humanist Chaplaincy at Harvard University, and this clip appears courtesy of the Humanist Chaplaincy and was also made possible by the Institute for Humanist Studies. Rabbi Sherwin T. Wine was the founder of Humanistic Judaism. He was killed in a car crash on July 21st, 2007, while vacationing in Morocco. For more information about Humanistic Judaism and Rabbi Sherwin Wine, visit the website of the Society for Humanistic Judaism at shj.org. To read a eulogy for Sherwin Wine by one of his proteges, Greg Epstein, the humanist chaplain at Harvard, visit harvardhumanist.org. And to listen to an interview with Rabbi Sherwin Wine and the Humanist Network News podcast team, visit humaniststudies.org/podcast. Here is Rabbi Sherwin Wine.
I'm glad to be here, and I want to say a word of tribute to the man who organized this thing. His name is Greg Epstein, and I know him very well because he trained as a humanistic rabbi. And he came to Harvard, and he succeeded a hard act. There was Tom Ferrick, a great founder of this humanist chaplaincy. But as you can see, look what Greg has done. We are all here, all right? And I do want to say to Salman Rushdie that last night was for me also a secular epiphany. It was absolutely wonderful because one of the things that you do in the celebration of humanism is you talk about the human condition, and what we all know is that the human condition is absurd. You celebrate the absurdity of the human condition. So people often ask me, well, what's your substitute for worshiping God? You worship people. I said, never. And the alternative to worship for me has always been something I've treasured. It's laughter. What I want to do first is to give you the question, because frequently you hear answers and you can't figure out the question. All right. So I want to give you the question, and the question of this panel that we're trying to deal with, and that question includes Professor Sen and Professor Du and the three of us who are here. And I do want to say from the beginning, since I didn't create the title, I never believed that Abraham ever existed, all right? Now, humanism flows from a revolution since the invention of agriculture, most likely the greatest revolution ever. I call it the secular revolution. And the secular revolution has created dichotomies, overwhelming dichotomies, dichotomies so great that our whole life has been totally altered by it. There is the dichotomy in knowledge. The world of science has so radically altered the way we see the world, even for people who call themselves religious, that we can't even imagine what people believed 200 years ago or 300 years ago. It created what I call the dichotomy in values. I grew up on the tail end of the old value system. The old value system placed great value in suffering, because that was the condition of most of the human race prior to the Industrial Revolution, all right? So everybody's asking, why am I suffering? And they were given the answer, suffering is good for you. It has redemptive power. My mother believed that. I mean, she really. It has redemptive power. She could always handle suffering, but never happiness. Okay. So the reversal is human beings are now empowered. So now they ask another question. which is outlined or mentioned in the Declaration of Independence. Thomas Jefferson may have put it in. Whoever heard of it? The right to pursue happiness. Happiness here on earth. Now that's a dichotomy. And in fact, it has changed the focus of our culture. It has raised human expectations, sometimes unreasonably, but there it is. There is what I call the focus revolution. The focus revolution, the focus dichotomy, is the removal of the focus of human attention from the next world and the next life and the supernatural to this world. Certainly today, if you walk into most, not fundamentalists, but most establishment churches, the minister, whoever it is, will not be talking about the afterlife. If he insists on doing it, he'll be fired. And that's the Episcopalians and the Presbyterians and the Methodists and whatever. They have been, and this is very important to understand, they have been secularized. And also there is the dichotomy in politics. Everybody who wants to be in politics today anywhere in the world has to use the word democracy. For most of human history, people were living in an authoritarian system in which authority flowed from the top down. And now we live in a political system, you know, it's all over the world now, in which people expect that those who rule will what? Be responsible to the people. And they may not do it, but that is the expectation. That is the revolution. So we live in this world of dichotomies. And what the dichotomy has produced is militancy on the part of the people who are still attached to the old world. And that militancy has triggered a militancy in the people who embrace the world of science and the world of the secular revolution, its war, and sometimes the behavior of the militants on the other side, certainly recently, has simply aggravated the notion of war. So one of the things that happens is that the humanist world for a long time gathered the wounded. It gathered the people who were wounded by the other side. Some terrible experience in the Roman Catholic Church, some terrible experience in the Muslim world, whatever it be. But the reality is that most of the people, certainly in the Western world and in other parts, are not aware secularists. They have been secularized. There's a difference. Secularized people are people, if you ask them, what's your religion, they'll say, I'm a Presbyterian, I'm a Methodist, whatever. They play golf on Sunday. They go to the symphony, do you understand, on Friday night, whatever. The point is, their behavior has been secularized. They are not hostile to religion. They don't even mind answering the question that way. They're not involved. And in fact, given their lifestyle, and most likely their belief system after secular education, they belong to us. But we don't know how to reach them. We know how to collect the wounded. We don't know how to collect, do you understand? We don't know how to collect the other, because when they show up, they don't like the meetings of the wounded. The meetings of the wounded are, there is no God, there is no God. And they're turned off, because that is what they feel. Which is worse, hatred or indifference? Hatred is what the wounded give to the other side. Indifference is where most what? Secularized people. They just don't think about it. They don't talk about God. They don't think about going to a service unless somebody's getting baptized, bar mitzvah, whatever else it is. They're in that secularized world. And we're not quite sure how to get to them because they are still part of the cultures in which the old religions were placed and which they sometimes dominated. And they don't know how to get to them. I mean, they don't know how to relate to the militant group that says, we separate ourselves. There is a dichotomy. You're either on one side or the other. So the question is that a sane, rational position for secularists? Because if you get sufficiently self-righteous, you can exclude almost everybody. I grew up in the world in my neighborhood of Jewish socialists. There initially were 25. They had a meeting. They broke up into two groups. When the group... Then the group of 12 had a meeting and they broke up into three groups. Are you getting the question? It's not an unimportant question. And that's what we're exploring. That is, if we could find some way of connecting to what is important for these people, then maybe they would be able to cross the bridge. Because it isn't religion that is the issue. They are part of a culture, an historic culture, whether it's Jewish culture, Christian culture, do you understand, Muslim culture. They can become profound atheists, but they're dealing with their mothers and their fathers and their grandmothers and the whole thing. And they're not prepared to reject it. Because in some cases, their experiences were not bad. They were not wounded. I was not wounded. I have very positive experiences of my Jewish past. I have. That's it. I didn't become a humanist because I was wounded, that I had some terrible person that followed me around with a stick and beat me over the head unless I said I believed in God. All right, so I'm going to tell you my story, the best way for you to understand humanistic Judaism. I was born in a problematic city. At one time, it was the great industrial capital of the world. I'll use the name Detroit. Our industry is now collapsing, but that's another issue I don't want to go into. And I was born into the world of Judaism. I didn't choose it. In the womb, they didn't come to me with a little slip. What would you like to be, ideologically? Well, are you a Sartrean, a Deweyite? I fell out of a Jewish womb. Do you understand? Most people are what they are religiously because they're born into it. They don't choose, and they find themselves part of a culture. And my culture was the culture of a sub-nation of the Jewish people of Judaism. They're called Ashkenazic Jews. They come from Northern Europe. They had a language called Yiddish. And they had all the foods of Northern Europe. They're just wonderful. Onions, beets, carrots, cabbage. No, it's a culture. Do you understand culture? And so there they were. And I was born into this culture, and I must tell you, my parents belonged to a synagogue, a conservative synagogue. Did they ever sit around and have a discussion about God? We talked about anti-Semitism and Jewish survival, whatever. We never talked about God. Jews didn't sit around talking about God. They were secularized. Even my immigrant parents, they came to America. Took 2 weeks, Ellis Island, Lower East Side, Detroit. So, I grew up in a Jewish world in which the issues were Adolf Hitler, not God. They were this worldly issues. And I grew up in this conservative synagogue, the ideology of which I did not agree with. But I didn't have nasty experiences. I had Jewish holidays and I loved them because they brought the family together. Do you know that? And they connected me to my ancestors and I felt pretty good about that. One of the things it gave me was a sense, a deep sense of roots and connection, a larger family to which I belong. I mean, we can all say we all belong to the human family, but that's pretty big. I used to have these friends who loved humanity in general, but couldn't talk to their mother. Anyways. So I had positive experiences. And from very early on, I didn't believe what the prayer book said, but most of the people around me didn't because they didn't understand the prayer book because it was in Hebrew and they didn't understand Hebrew. So that was it. The mistake of the Reform movement was to translate the prayers into English. Mistake, mistake, mistake. So I had these positive experiences, and what certainly was the thing for my humanism was something called the Holocaust. How could you believe in a kind and loving manager of the world? I mean, the only conclusion you could reach is if there is a God, he is either one of two things. He is either cruel or incompetent. If he's cruel, he's lost his moral authority. And if he's incompetent, why do you want to bother with it? So, finished. Well, then I would look for a profession. I majored in philosophy at the University of Michigan. I wanted to do something in philosophy and with my Jewish cultural identity. I had a culture. The religion wasn't the main part of my culture, as in many respects, it isn't even the main part of Christian culture in Europe, certainly, and in most parts of North America, except the Deep South. So I chose the rabbinate. And when I got there, I found that half the students who were there were closet humanists. Vocabulary. Of worship. It did not fit what I believed or where I was, so it became intolerable. I could have done what most of the closet humanists who went to seminary with me did, and what is now at the heart of liberal religion, which is denounced by Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins. I could have simply taken the word God and made it mean what it doesn't mean. It's easy. God is love. Oh. Well, if you already have the word love, why do you need the word God? God is nature. Well, if you already have the word nature, I mean, the whole point. That is, we desperately want to hang on to the word that seems to confer authority. So separation from that word is for many people a traumatic thing. It's a vocabulary thing. And ultimately, I was liberated, and so I wasn't going to stay in the Reform rabbinate. So I went out and I organized a congregation that became the first congregation of what we call humanistic Judaism. And now let me give you the principles of humanistic Judaism as succinctly as I can. First, and I didn't originate this idea, Judaism is the culture, not the religion. The word Judaism is like the word Hellenism also, all right? Judaism is the culture of the Jewish people. It's a culture. And in fact, it was at one time dominated by the clergy, but it has elements that go beyond religion. It has music and dance and food, do you understand? And ethical values that are independent of divine authority, and a history and memories. So, it's a culture. Why do I have to throw away the culture if I have no interest in what is narrowly called the religion? Huh? So, The second statement was that my experience as a Jew made me realize that Jewish history, indeed, was a testimony to humanism. The last conclusion you would come watching the history of the Jews, like watching the history of the blacks, is that there is a kind and loving administration. It's the last conclusion you would come to. In fact, my experience as a Jew always led me to feel that indeed that wasn't the case. There were two characteristics of Jewish culture that I loved, and they all, to some degree, came from the negative experiences that Jews had in their historical experience. I loved it certainly far more than praying, which was intolerable. Ambition. In the Talmud it says, every man should be content with his lot. Well, Jews aren't. And the reason they're not is they can't trust the administration. Do you understand that? If they had taken all the old principles like that, they would never have made it to Harvard. All right. And the second thing was Jewish humor. Now, Jewish humor is expressed in the Shalom Aleichem story, where Tevye, you know, the Fiddler on the Roof, says to God, I want to thank you for making us the chosen people, but would you mind choosing somebody else for a change? Now, that's a Jewish joke. No, it is. Now, that's the culture. There's an underground culture, do you understand, that isn't expressed in the prayer book. It was always a part of what I call the Jewish world, and it was the part that I love that reinforced the humanism. So, the third thing is, my humanism is enhanced by my contact with my family and historic culture. It's not undermined, it is what? It's something additional that is enhanced, and one of the things it gives me. Salman Rushdie said, or was it Steven Pinker? I think, who said the chess club? Did you say chess club, joining a humanist association? Yeah, right, Pinker, right. So, joining the humanist organization was like joining the chess club because there's no emotional content. There's no connection to family, to history, to roots, to whatever. It's an ideological organization that meets somewhere, all right? So, what it did was it enriched my humanism. And in fact, that was my message, and out of it, other people who certainly couldn't connect simply to joining a militant humanist organization came to humanistic Judaism. It was a vehicle for doing that. And in fact, that's what I mean. They were not hostile, they were what? Secularized. So I didn't come to them with the message of the wounded. I came to them talking about my pleasure, do you understand? In my culture and in humanism as a philosophy of life, I refused to say what I did not believe, which is the next principle. We will not do the tactic of traditional liberal religion, which is to take old words and make them mean what? They don't mean. We say it loudly and clearly, we're humanists, we do not talk to God, we do not pray to God, we are in charge of our lives, and there is no need to have God as the foundation of our ethical principles. That's what it is. But then we also have a whole history. Over the last 300 years, the majority of the Jewish people has been secularized. Felix Posen sponsored a survey of Jews in North America who were offered an alternative. Two words. Are you religious or secular? 47%. Is that right? 49. See how conservative I am. 49% said secular. Well, that's humanistic Judaism, all right? And I want to say that raises the question, and it's a very interesting one. If you're trying to reach the Chinese, if you're trying to reach the Indian, do you understand? If you're trying to reach the secularized Christian world, I'd mentioned this to Salman Rushdie. I love the idea of atheism mass, or atheist mass, or whatever you call it, all right? He mentioned it last night, but it won't work. Because what happens is most secular Christians do Christmas. Do you know that? They rearrange it, they reinterpret it, whatever else it is, they do that. Because it's connected to their mother, their father, their grandmother. You can't sever people from their ancestors. You may try, and there will always be that group that doesn't care. So the question is it possible to have a secular Judaism, a secular Christianity, a secular Islam, a secular Hinduism, Professor Sen spoke, a secular, this Confucianism is the fundamental, right, background to Chinese culture, a kind of secular Confucianism. I mean, can you have these things? Can you retain your ancestral connection and preserve your integrity? The balancing between continuity and, right? It's a balancing act, always. For some people, they don't want continuity. They just want the integrity. For some people, they're willing to sacrifice the integrity to have the what? The continuity. So they'll say things they don't believe because they want the comfort of the continuity. And so we're in this delicate, always balancing act between the two. And so that's my answer. And the answer, I think, of most humanistic Jews to the question is it possible not to have an adversarial relationship to the cultures of the past, to view the religious systems of the past not only as religions, but to view them as cultures? Got the question? Got my answer? You've been wonderful. Thank you so much.
The Humanist Network News podcast is made possible by the Institute for Humanist Studies, a nonprofit think tank that promotes the philosophy of humanism.